Lieutenant Staff Sergeant Eric D. Christian, age 39, of Warwick, New York, right up the road here, from the same unit. Captain Mark T. Voss, age 27, of Bern, Texas, 92nd Operations Group. He was one of three airmen killed when their aerial refueling aircraft crashed in northern Afghanistan on May 3rd. The other two were Tech Sergeant Herman Mackey III, age 30, of Bakersfield, California, Captain Victoria A. Pinckney, age 27, of Palmdale, California, Private First Class Charles P. McClure, age 21, of Stratford, Ohio, of the 4th Infantry. He was one of two soldiers killed in a car crash in Kuwait on May 2nd. So our guys are dying. You know, when you're in the service, you're in a high-risk profession, and all kinds of things happen. The other killed in that same car crash was Specialist Trinidad Santiago Jr., age 25, from San Diego, California. He was with the same unit. Staff Sergeant Michael H. Simpson, age 30, of San Antonio, Texas. He was with the 1st Special Forces Group, injured by a roadside bomb on April 27th. He died on May 1st at Landstuhl Regional Medical Center in Landstuhl, Germany. Four American servicemen were killed when their reconnaissance aircraft crashed in Zabul Province on April 27th. Initial reports indicate no enemy activity in the area. They were Captain Brandon Lee Sayre, age 28, of Woodbridge, Virginia. He was with the 375th Air Mobility Wing. Staff Sergeant Richard Andrew Dixon, age 24, of Rancho Cordova, California, with the 361st Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance Group. Captain Reed Kijiro Nishizuka, age 30, of Kailua, Hawaii, with the 9th Recon Wing. And Staff Sergeant Daniel Neil Fannin, age 30, from Moorhead, Kentucky, with the 552nd Air Control Wing. These 11 American servicemen and one American servicewoman were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. Each death is a great loss to his or her family and to all of us. I personally am grateful for their service and I mourn their loss. I look forward to the day when the conflict in Afghanistan comes to an end and there are no more deaths to report and hopefully no more wars, at least in the near future. The Syrian thing has me a little worried. Okay, time for the Culture Corner, my review of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to disagree with them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Well, we went to the Metropolitan Opera, saw Rigoletto. It's a new production of Rigoletto. It's got Lisette Oropesa in the role of Gilda, the soprano. Vittorio Grigiolo, who brings a great level of energy to his portrayal of the Duke, and George Gagnidze in the title role. It feels like I'm calling the names of terrorists because it's hard to say these. As we all know, of course, Rigoletto serves the Duke, who is a ladies' man, and contracts have the Duke killed when he defiles Rigoletto's daughter, only to have the revenge backfire, the scheme backfire with his daughter Gilda's death. Well, we expect such shenanigans from opera and ballet, thin stories of massive betrayal, murder, and mayhem. Well, we got it. However, this new production, it's set in Las Vegas rather than a Duke's Palace in Italy. The sets are fabulous. Act one opens in a casino, which will really knock your socks off. I had to go home barefoot. Okay, you got me. Nothing like the stage scene one expects from opera, most especially at the Met. This set is smoking. Neon lights, red lights, blue lights, a very effective elevator unit. It's a panel of lights. It just, as the elevator is going up, different lights light. It's really cool. No spectacular performances here, but of course there are no bad singers at the Met, and Miss Oropesa as Gilda does hit the highs very, very cleanly, and she's darn good. And then again, in Act 3, the production leaves the conservative mode while being true to the Las Vegas setting, where they introduce a pole dancer on the stage of the Met. I love it. What a surprise. The audience laughed heartily in appreciation of this departure from form. Always a good show at the Met, and this one certainly was. Whether it is worth the $187.50 balcony seat, you will have to decide for yourself. And the other thing we saw was the movie 42, the Jackie Robinson story. If you were to watch a baseball game before 1947, you'd be watching a bunch of white guys playing the game. That all changed when in 1947, at the age of 28, Jackie Robinson took the field for the Brooklyn Dodgers. Branch Rickey, the Dodger owner, whether out of humanistic motive or the desire to win and wanting to tap the great talent outside the major leagues, defied the status quo and brought Robinson up. Soon after his success, Roy Campanella and Don Newcomb joined the team, and today, of course, nobody cares. Technically, there were black players in the majors in the 1880s, but then segregation took over and stayed that way until Jackie Robinson, number 42, broke that barrier. Branch Rickey, excellently played by Harrison Ford, was the shirt and tie partner to the scrappy first baseman. He moved to second the next year and stayed there for most of his career. Harrison Ford, you don't even think about Indiana Jones in this. He just plays it well. He's a really, really good actor. It's not a great movie, actually, but a great story. Definitely worth the price of admission if you like baseball or if you like people. A couple of notes. Number 42 is the only number to be retired by all of Major League Baseball. The only player still wearing it and who's on active duty is Mariano Rivera, the legendary closer for the New York Yankees, but he is the last. In the future, all major leaguers will wear number 42 on April 15th, which is Jackie Robinson Day, the anniversary of his debut in Major League Baseball 66 years ago. Okay, we are expecting a call from London, and it looks like we have him. Okay, good. So we have Jason Gibbs holding, so let's just introduce him before the break. My guest is Jason Gibbs. He's a city boy turned country boy, owner of perhaps a pet dog or a cat, to owner of many farm animals, most of them pets. Before I introduce him, in the studio with us are Sandra Prosnitz, Jason's aunt, and Robert Wersing, a friend of ours.
Hello.
Okay. All right. Joining us from outside London, England, welcome Jason Gibbs.
Hi.
Good morning, Jason. Sorry about the mix-up with the phones. I'll explain it to you another time. How is the weather in London this morning? This afternoon, actually, right?
This morning it was lovely. It was lovely sunshine, but this afternoon it's been heavy showers, so it's a bit miserable.
Well, we have some showers here, and I personally like that, so it's quite lovely here as well. So what time is it by you? It's about 3 in the afternoon?
Yeah, it's 3:45.
3:45 in the afternoon. Okay. Now, your book, Pigs, Poultry, and Poo, two copies of which I have here on my desk in the studio, is actually your memoir of your journey from the city. We're going to take a break before we actually get to it, but let's just take the break rather than start a question. I have to interrupt you. Okay, you're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Lexington, Massachusetts, Kentucky, Alabama, Georgia, or Illinois, if you're listening in London, Belize, London, Ontario, Equatorial Guinea, or County Londonderry, Ireland, or, of course, in London, England, you have logged on to www.wvox.com and you are listening live, and we will be right back.
National news 3 times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Pat O'Neill. The man accused of holding 3 women in his Cleveland home for over a decade arraigned today for kidnapping and rape.
The prosecutor using some strong words to describe these charges. Deliberate, depraved, saying these 3 women withstood repeated beatings. And then at the end, he even was taking a personal shot at Castro, saying now he's the captive.
Fox's Garrett Tenney, bond for all the charges against Ariel Castro, set at $8 million. At a House panel hearing in the Boston Marathon bombings, Chairman Michael McCaul says the dead suspect in the case was on the terror list.
He was on our radar screen, and then he was off.
It's believed a spelling error let him leave the U.S. and return. Police, meanwhile, say he has been buried outside Worcester, Mass. A new report says new, cheaper generic drugs are leading to lower prices, with spending on prescription drugs last year down for the first time in more than 5 decades. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Of all the gifts we can give our children, perhaps the greatest of all is imagination, a sense of wonder, the joy of discovery. There's a place for this, a one-of-a-kind toy store called G. Willikers in downtown Katona with the classic toys you loved as a kid, plus the very latest inventive playthings. At G. Willikers, you enter a child's wonderland, a gentle jungle of stuffed animals, exquisite dolls from France and Germany, organic and eco-friendly toys, and sturdy wooden trucks. You'll find a friendly and helpful staff with great suggestions for every child on your list. Locally owned and operated, G. Willikers, 29 Katona Avenue, directly across from the train station in Katona, for the gifts of imagination. 914-301-5274. G. Willikers in Katona, 914-301-5274.
Welcome to Free Radio. Free. No download fees, no subscription fees, and
it's accepted by the American Dental Association.
VOX.
WVOX.
We are back. We are speaking with Jason Gibbs outside of London, England. Jason, you're in the home counties. You want to just give us a word about the home counties, what that means?
It's a sort of general phrase, and it means that the counties that form a sort of a band around London, mostly in the southeast. I don't really know where it comes from, but it's quite a large area.
Okay.
So I'm about 60, 70 miles from the edge of London.
So when we talk about the home counties, at least we know it's somewhere around London.
Yeah.
That's probably enough for us here. Okay. Now, you have a wide variety of animals, some common ones like sheep and a goat and a cow and stuff, but you also have alpaca. Why don't you give us just a little summary of your menagerie and maybe just a little bit about each?
Okay. So at the moment, we have about 36 sheep. We actually have several breeds of sheep, including two very rare breeds, the Surrey sheep and Borrorays, who are the rarest in the UK. There's only 300 registered ewes across the country. We've kept sheep for a few years. They are interesting creatures. They're certainly not as foolish. Well, not all of them as foolish as they're sometimes thought to be. We have one goat. We used to have more, but we've had a very bad winter, and she's the only remaining goat. She's a pygmy. She's quite fun. Every now and again, she decides to demonstrate that no fence can stop her. And she goes wandering in the forest and various other things. We have one cow. We used to have two. We lost one over the winter again. She's a Dexter cow, which is the smallest. It's a rare breed, and it's the smallest breed in the country as well. What we didn't realize when we got them is that Dexters are known as the small cow with the big personality. And she certainly does have a lot of personality. She's very loud. She likes to moo aggressively when she doesn't get food fast enough.
Now, when you say she's small, just what does that mean in cow terms? Is she as big as a dog, a mouse, a horse?
She's about two-thirds of the size of she's about the size of a donkey, that's probably, but wider.
Okay.
She's still, you know, cow-shaped. So she's not small, and that's the problem, I think, for us. We thought she was going to be a bit smaller, but actually she's still quite big. And she's not interested in being touched or handled or in any way, which means doing any maintenance on her is tricky.
Now, you say this cow has a strange personality?
Yes.
Okay, let's leave it at that. What about the alpaca?
the thing about the cow is when we bought them, we decided to give the cows names of the seven sins because we had this weird idea that it might make it easier to slaughter them, not that we're going to, and we called her Wrath. And she's definitely lived up to that name. She's definitely an angry cow.
Can you name the other six deadly sins?
Wrath, avarice, sloth, greed, lust. I'm lost.
Well, it's very hard to name all at the same time, but that was very good. How about the seven dwarfs? So let's not. And then we go into the five families, but let's not do that. That's just having fun, and we don't have enough time to have fun. So let's get down to the serious business. What made you decide to move to the country, and how in the world did you get a woman named Alexandra to actually follow you and share these pigs, poultry, and poo?
Well, I'm going to give her half the credit for this. So we lived in a small flat in Islington, which is, you know, near the center of London. And it was really good, but we decided that we wanted to move out and do something different with our lives. And we spent about a year looking, and we'd kind of given up on the right sort of property. And then we were told by my in-laws to come and visit this place, which is about 20 minutes down the road from them. And it was a disused barn that had been given planning permission to be converted into a house. And I thought, you know, this is really nice, but, you know, maybe not for us right now. And I looked around at Alex, and she was besotted. So we were committed.
She loved it.
Absolutely loved it.
Most Americans don't understand what besotted is, but...
Okay.
So we just... She loved it, right?
She absolutely loved it, okay, yes. Her eyes were little heart-shaped. And it's a truly wonderful building, and I'm standing in it now, and I still can't believe I live in a barn. It is amazing. It still had cow poo on the walls. It still had chickens in one of the buildings. It was still very agricultural, and we've spent the last 8 years slowly converting it into a house, and that was the main thing we were doing. But it also came with 12 acres of land. And for the first year, we didn't really do anything with that land. And then we were offered some goats, a couple of goats. We sort of rescued them from their other fate would have been to go to a curry house. So we did them a favor.
These are Angora goats.
They were Angoran goats. And they were quite old. They were about 7 or 8 at the time. And when we first got them, we were very nervous around them, very frightened. But we got used to them, and they were just amazing. They were really good fun. They definitely had personalities. You know, one was called Bill or Wilhelmina, and she was friendly. She always wanted to come up and see what you were doing, and you know, it wasn't always just about food. And her sister was called Ted or Theodora, and she was nervous, and she wouldn't come too close unless there was food, and then she was always keeping an eye on you. But if there was something they wanted, if there was some kind of food or something like that, they'd always work out a way of getting to it. And they were great fun, and they sort of got us used to keeping animals, and that sort of kicked off then adding the various other creatures to the collection.
Have you ever been butted by a billy goat?
I have not been butted by a billy goat because we've stayed away from billy goats. I have been butted by a ram. Our ram has butted me on a number of occasions when I've been a bit slow to feed him.
Well, they're actually a more formidable animal than the goat, aren't they? Sheep is bigger, right?
Unfortunately, not this one. They're quite small.
Okay.
It still hurts.
Because if you haven't been butted by a goat, I was going to say you haven't lived yet. Because I proudly state I have been butted by goats. But never by a sheep, though.
I'd stick with the goats. They're probably more fun.
Okay. In our pre-conversation, you have said that you have a larder full of meat, and it's been animals that you've had. How do you feel about slaughtering animals that you know?
I sort of have the philosophy that it's a positive thing because I know how they've been treated, I know what they've been fed, I know they've been looked after. We go to a very good slaughterhouse, and I've seen inside it, and I know that they, you know, look after them as well as they can before the slaughter. They're not stressed.
Jason?
Particularly.
Jason, the question was, how do you feel about it?
How do I feel? So I think I'm quite happy with it, I guess. I think it's good food, and I think it's a positive relationship. I look after the animals, and then they look after me.
Excellent, excellent. Do they look after you like a watchdog? They'll let you know if somebody's coming down the road, that kind of look after you? Or just... They are food for you.
Yeah, some of them do that, and some of them provide food.
And some are just warm and fuzzy pets, right?
Yes, some are just pets. certainly, they've got a lot of personality. I think people assume that farm animals are a bit boring, but they've got as much personality as dogs and cats.
Okay, and now alpaca. I have a vague notion that they're something like llamas, which are something like camels, right? Are they in the same... family there?
They're all the same family, yes.
So what's an alpaca? Yeah.
It's a small llama, so it kind of looks like a long-necked sheep. And the reason we got them was because they, allegedly, and I'm not quite sure if they do, but they will attack foxes. So we got them when we got our first set of ewes that were going to give birth to lambs, and we wanted to protect the lambs during the lambing season. And the theory is that the alpaca thinks it's part of the sheep flock, and the sheep sort of let the alpacas take part because they think it's just a big sheep, and then it looks after them. And certainly for a few years, I don't think we lost any lambs to foxes. So it might well have worked.
And you actually have lots of fox in England, don't you?
They're everywhere.
I guess that's where fox hunting probably originated.
Jason, yeah. I thought you lost a lot of chickens to foxes.
We have. We've lost, I think, three or four groups in periods of time to foxes. We did used to have them in the same field as the alpacas and everything else, but they then wander and get lost and I think get taken by foxes. So they're now in their own fenced-off area, which usually we've still actually lost them a couple of times, but usually it keeps the foxes out.
So you've solved that problem now.
As long as the electric fence works, yes.
it seemed to me at one point that I was always hearing about how you'd lost another lot of chickens.
But it certainly was. I think we had a bad year. And part of the problem was you'd get one or two that would survive, and you'd think, brilliant, and then they'd be the first taken the next time round. It was quite depressing for a short while.
So you think the alpaca probably are protective, though?
Yeah, I think they help. I certainly do think they help.
Okay. Now, you have this book. We only have a minute to talk about it, but the book is called Pigs, Poultry, and Poo. It's subtitled An Urbanite Couple's Journey to Country Life. This is just a memoir, right?
It is. It's the first 5 years after we moved out and got our animals.
Uh-huh. And basically, it is the story. Is it available in this country? We have two copies, but I believe you sent them both. Or did no?
It is. It's available from Amazon.com and okay. Barnes & Noble.
Yes, I ordered mine from Amazon, I think. And Jason, I do think that you write very nicely and the book has a lot of charm.
Thank you.
We all like to write in the family.
Okay, Jason, again, I'm sorry for the phone glitch. I'll talk to you later about that. And it's been a delight talking to you. And it sounds like you have an enviable life. And should I get out that way, I'm certainly going to stop by.
You'd be very welcome.
Thank you. And maybe we can get butted by billy goats together.
That would be good.
Okay, Jason, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I'd like to thank Jason Gibbs for taking time away from his flock of sheep, brace of alpaca, chickens, ducks, geese, goat, wayward cow, and wife Alex to pass these few minutes with us. Best of luck with your animals and your writing. Our thought for the week, how will your conscience survive the future? Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio, the best small station in the world. I do not... Who is Howard? Okay, Howard is not here, so I'll save his quip for when I see him. But he will be here, Howard Sturman, up next. I am Bob Lovensold, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Sandra. Thank you, Robert. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.